Those of us who go back to the 60s can well relate to that song. And it seems as though that song could be revived today and played today and would totally fit the times we're living in. The song, the title is For What It's Worth. That's the actual title of it, For What It's Worth, done by Buffalo Springfield back in the late 60s when that song was put out. And as I said, it captured the essence of the turbulent 60s, and I kind of began to come of age myself in the 60s as a teenager and began to grow toward manhood and graduate high school in 71. Today, I'm going to give you your title right up front. As a watchman, what I see and why. As a watchman, what I see and why. The ministry of Jesus Christ has been called to be a watchman on the wall. I understand that now more than ever. Pastoral ministry especially is to be that watchman, and I shall continue to do that through messages and columns that I write. If you're reading what I write, if you read the other night what I sent out, I feel duty bound to do that. You know, from the song there, what's going down? Is it clear to you? What's that sound? We better stop, children, and see what's going down. I ask all of you today as kind of a theme or SBS of this message, what is going on down here and why? What's going on and why? Can you begin to make sense of it? Many of you may say, well, it's getting harder and harder to make sense of things. Well, that's true. But I want to go into some things today. Where do I start? Really, where do I start in trying to frame this message? Because as I begin to talk about this subject, I see Earth, the Earth we live on, the home to us all. I see this Earth now in chaos and confusion. I see Earth with its people reeling in just confusion, insanity. Things are getting more mad by the moment. You know, I've written about it. I mean, where does the madness go? One may ask that question. Theoretically, where does the madness go? What happens? I think we know here in this room. Those of you who are listening in, I think we've always known for decades, those of us who have been around for so long. You know, we used to think, well, these times are coming. And, of course, the times are now here. And so humanity, as we look around, is descending into deeper and deeper depravity and decadence. I was reading the other day about what happened to Sodom. That is Sodom and Gomorrah. I was reading about what happened to Sodom. Do you know where Sodom's problem started? Sodom's problem started with its affluence. It started with its affluence, its materialistic approach. And as affluence becomes greater and greater with a nation, the worse depravity you begin to see. And that's what we see with a miracle. As we have gotten more and more affluent over the decades, the very blessings that God blessed us with has been a curse to us because we have not treated them as a blessing, but we have allowed them to be a curse in that we have forgotten God. You can read Deuteronomy chapter 8 sometimes. Jot it down. Deuteronomy chapter 8 sometimes. I will move rapid fire today. Hope you'll keep up. Write scriptures down. I'm going to cover a lot of ground. I'm going to quote a lot of scriptures. Write them down. I will repeat them as I do. Let me begin to paint the picture. I want to start to paint this picture today. And I want to paint, as was said by a man long ago, I want to paint in bold colors. I want to paint in bold colors what I see as a watchman. Because I know that's what I am. I'm a watchman. And I'm the one, most of all, the pastors, most of all, are the ones to cry aloud. And shame on pastors who don't do that. So I want to start talking about it. We, if a miracle could be viewed as a home, we are one big old broken dysfunctional home now. If a miracle could be portrayed as a home, and it is, it's a home to us all. It is a broken dysfunctional home and getting more dysfunctional all the time. You name the problem, we've got it. Whatever the problem is, we've got it. And the problems are becoming more and more magnified. These problems are not going away. They're not going to go away. These problems are going to become more magnified because there's something in the nature of man called human nature, carnality, hostility to God, that is getting worse and worse. And I will come to that later as to why. Right now, the whole moral and social order is absolutely being ripped apart. Hey, stop, listen, everybody. What's that sound going down? It's the sound of our whole moral and social order being torn asunder, ripped apart, right from in front of our view. It's out with the old. Get rid of the old. All the old is outdated, archaic. We're living in council culture. It's everything new now. Don't you know, brother? It's all about the new morality. The first time I heard that term, new morality, was as a teenager. Every new and perverse lifestyle is being promoted. Right is wrong. You know that? Right is wrong. Wrong is right. You remember in the song, the line of the song, everybody can't be right if everybody's wrong. And it seems everybody out here has got their own truth, their own rightness. I'm reminded of Judges, the book of Judges, the last verse. It's verse 23 in the last chapter of Judges. And everybody in Israel was doing what was right in their own eyes. That's what I see as a watchman. I see everybody more and more doing what is right in their own eyes. And I see the church at times beginning to do that because culture is coming into the church. It has been and will continue to come and crash. It's crashing into the church, brethren. It is not creeping into the church. It is crashing into the church. Where are we going to stand as culture continues to tear down the walls of everything good, right, and proper? There's no absolutes anymore. No absolutes. Everything's okay anymore. By the way, what shade of gray do you like? Because everything's become nothing but shades of gray. I mean, there's no longer any moral absolutes, no moral principles, nothing solid foundational from the past to govern our lives. We have breakdown of law and order. We have the spirit of anarchy everywhere. Look around. Divisions are growing. Wedges are increasing. Divisions among people. We're dividing over everything. We're dividing over mask or no mask. We're dividing over to be vaccinated or not to be vaccinated. You can go on and take it into every field, everything in society. We're dividing along every line. Why? We'll get to that later. We have fear and paranoia. You heard it addressed in the song from the 60s. We have fear and paranoia that is spreading like a disease. We've seen what the COVID has done. It's cast paranoia and fear through a whole populace and the whole world. And yet that's by far nothing compared to what's going to come at us in the future. The COVID virus and what it's done is nothing compared to what's going to come at us. Are you beginning to feel earth and heaven begin to shake? Are you beginning to feel that? What about, are your institutions working for you now? Are your schools working for you? Your colleges, your universities? Are the churches of the land? Are the pastors of the land? Are they fulfilling their duties? All too sad most of the time and too much of the time. No, they're not. Because too many out in the land are not crying aloud and sparing not, as Isaiah 58, chapter 58, verse 1 tells us. The greatest watchmen are to be those in pastoral ministry. And if we in pastoral ministry do not cry out, if we do not, as watchmen on the walls, do that, then we are going to ourselves face Christ one day and have to answer for why we didn't do that. Every support system of society, brethren, is breaking down. Can you see it? Can you hear it? Can you feel it? What's that sound going down? It's the sound of everything fracturing. We're hearing the cracking and the absolute breakup, like breaking glass. Everything's breaking apart. We can't lay our hands on anything that seems solid anymore, except this, His Word. his understanding, his wisdom. More and more failures, foundational, functional pillars of society being broken down. The man who was called the father of our country. By the way, he couldn't be called father no more, I guess. George Washington. The father of our country. There would have been no United States of America if God had not led a man named George Washington to keep things together, win the victories on the field, and they turned to him as the first two-term president. And George Washington said, the twin pillars of any strong society is its religious and moral underpinnings. Those are the two twin pillars of every strong civilized nation. We had those as our underpinnings at one time, and that whole essence is being ripped away, and it's being done by design. Brethren, these things are not happening by happenstance or coincidence. These things are being done. It's being orchestrated by a very orchestrated, planned design. And I will get to that, like I said, as time goes on in the message. You heard the story of Humpty Dumpty. These little children back here, they know who Humpty Dumpty is, I think. Parents, if you haven't told the story of Humpty Dumpty, tell your children the story of Humpty Dumpty. Humpty Dumpty is broken. He fell off the wall, had a great fall. And all the king's men and horses and whatever can't put Humpty Dumpty together again, just to paraphrase. We've got a very broken world, brethren, and there's no way to put it back together. There's no way. If your hope is in trying to put together this world back together again, if your hope is based on thinking we can put this thing back together again, you're false. You got a false hope. What's coming very soon? The Feast of Tabernacles. It's coming very soon. And what does that picture? It pictures a time coming when Jesus Christ, the only one, will come back and begin to restore this world. And it's going to take that. And I hope now more than ever, those of us who have kept the Feast of Tabernacles for decades, and most of us in this room have, are you not beginning to yearn for what that time pictures? Because that's only a foretaste of what we will go and do here in a few weeks. That will be just a sample taste test. I mean, we'll just get a sample of what's going to be on the scene for 1,000 years when it comes. What's that sound going down? It's the sound of our world, our nation, fracturing, being torn down, ripped apart. Where has been and where is the greatest demolition taking place in society? What started decades ago, by grand design, what had to go and be destroyed in our society first and foremost? What was the one thing that had to be attacked the most and had to be destroyed? And it started decades ago. It started really, especially post-World War II. And that was, we've got to tear the family unit apart. The family unit has got to go. See, I'm speaking of sinister designs. And I'm going to get to that. Because the why may be the most important thing to know. We all can see, no doubt, most of us can see what's going on. But what I want to do today is to help you to make even more sense of it and to leave here today knowing why, even more so why it's happening, where it's going, that you will understand even more. See, the marriage between a man and a woman, it's an institution. There were two institutions given at creation, marriage and the Sabbath, the seventh-day Sabbath. And the seventh-day Sabbath has always been under attack for thousands of years and is under more attack than ever. And then you have marriage under attack. Marriage began to come under attack more than ever post-World War II. Things began to happen with the nuclear family post-World War II. I don't have the time to have you in a lecture every day, which I could do it. I could take each one of you, like in a classroom, all of you, and do a lecture for several days on what and began to happen with the breakdown of the nuclear family post-World War II. And it was to tear and rip the family apart, to demolish the family unit, because the whole foundational makeup of any society stable starts with a basic building block of family. husband and wife, father and mother, and that's where it starts, and building strong families. And if you have strong families throughout a nation, then you have a strong nation. So marriage is now what? Marriage is whatever people say it is. And I don't have time to belabor and dwell on these things, but just to point them out and move on to other things. But marriage is whatever you say it is now. It can be between same individuals of the same sex, as you know. You know, someone said a long time ago, and I can't take credit for this statement, someone said a long time ago, said, it's not a marriage is not between Adam and Steve, but between Adam and Eve. What about fatherhood? Have you ever considered that fatherhood, God set the father as the head of the house. He set the father to be that strong figure of leadership in that family unit. Fatherhood has been so decimated and ripped apart and put down. Fatherhood? Do you see a nation now with family units with strong fathers? See, you must first, in a marriage, you must first destroy the biggest pillar in that marriage of all, and that is fatherhood, strong fathers. And we've seen that happen over the decades. You can sit here, you can ponder as to the reasons how it happened. I know how it's happened. I moved to motherhood. What about motherhood? It used to be that motherhood was so respected. Motherhood was so respected and revered. My mother worked 2 years outside the home when I was a little bitty boy. The four of us were little bitty boys. She worked 2 years outside the home. And after 2 years, she said, it's not worth it. Her and my father, it's not worth it. I'm coming home to raise my sons. Best thing ever happened. And she was home with us and she raised us. There's no greater calling than to be a mother and motherhood. And it's denigrated now. It's denigrated. The 60s brought us the feminist movement. And it was one big lie. The feminist movement told you ladies and mothers, you can have it all. You can have the career. You can have your children. You can be the best wife. You can multitask. You can have all this. It was a lie. It's a big lie. Because we were not built to truly multitask. The feminist movement was one of the most damaging things that ever happened to family. It was a reason why that movement came about. It was a big lie. As mothers were told to seek self-fulfillment, you don't have to think about raising those children so much as just fulfill yourself. Get a career. Be a career woman. I'm not per se putting career women down. That's not my point. What I'm doing is, and I'm boldly painting in bold colors today, and I'm not apologetic about it. I've seen this for decades. I grew up with this. I've seen what it's done to families. I'm looking back as a watchman back over my whole life behind me and even now, and I see what's happened. It's called social engineering. There's another term you hear from time to time. Oh, we're going to have all this social engineering, and we still do more than ever. By the way, whatever happened to true masculinity? Most don't even know what that is anymore. How many of you remember here about a year or so ago, masculinity is toxic? It was all over the liberal news. You don't want to teach your sons to be masculine. Masculinity is toxic. It was all over the news for a while. And boy, did I bristle. Did I bristle. My mother taught four sons how to be masculine. And had she had daughters, she'd have taught them how to be feminine. What about femininity? What's that? You see, men and women, we all have been abused. We all have been misdirected. We've lost touch with these things because false teaching has come into the picture. False education has crept in, and it crept in decades ago by grand design. And what you're seeing in this world right now, what's going on down here? What's happening? What's that sound I hear? It is all by grand design. What about all the lifestyles that have brought more and more frustrations and emptiness? And finally, who has suffered the most and who does suffer the most? our precious, innocent, most naive little children. Most of all, our little children are the ones who suffer the most. Parents in this room today, any of you parents that may be listening in, you have the greatest challenge to raise your children now. The challenge to raise them right is greater than it's ever been. And you know, I have found out having grandchildren, Ron and I having our grandchildren, it doesn't get easier because we're just as concerned for our grandchildren as we were for our children. So it never lets up. And if you have great grandchildren, it never lets up because you love them and your love is extended to them. We know in Romans 8 verse 22, you can jot it down. Romans chapter 8 verse 22. And look at these words by the Apostle Paul, almost as a prophecy as well. He says, "For we know that the whole creation, that is earth, groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." You know, if the Apostle Paul could speak way back then of the earth groaning for deliverance 2,000 years or so ago, what would Paul say now? What would the Apostle Paul say were he to be on the scene now and see the carnage, to see the confusion, the chaos, the madness, the insanity, you name it? What would the Apostle Paul say? I know what he'd say. Put me back in the grave and wait for Christ to come back. Paul would say, I can't solve this. Paul might say, even Solomon couldn't solve this. You know, I told someone here recently, I said, you know, if Solomon, theoretically having a little fun with it, if Solomon, God resurrected Solomon for 24 hours, you know, the wisest man ever lived, you know, and said, Solomon, start solving some of these cases. It wouldn't take Solomon but a few minutes probably to say, hey, this is beyond my pay grade. You hear that term at times. You know, we can just feel this earth reeling and shaking. It's almost like this earth is moving experience. Everything is shaking and moving. Nothing gets still. It's like, would everything just get still for a moment? You know, if you ever had an equilibrium attack, you know, your inner ear or something, you have some dizziness, you just hope everything would just kind of get still and it doesn't get still. And many of you, you know about this, you will maybe lay down, shut your eyes because everything is moving around you. See, our equilibrium is getting more and more interfered with. Our physical, our spiritual, most of all, we're having everything interfered with, again, by grand design. We should have known long ago and believed the prophecies, and Jesus Christ said it in the Olivet Prophecy. I'll give you a verse. You can jot it down, a verse from the Olivet Prophecy. How many times do we quote it? How many times will it yet be quoted? And how many times does it need to be quoted until we just absolutely just emblazon it upon our conscious minds? Matthew 24, verse 12. Matthew chapter 24, verse 12, the Olivet Prophecy. Christ says, "And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold." Is that prophecy really coming to pass now? Absolutely. Because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold or wax cold. That's why when we see all this lawlessness, we see less and less empathy of people for one another. We see wedges being driven between each other. We see family members turning on family members. We see neighbor on neighbor, citizen on citizen. Government leader against government leader. We're seeing this everywhere across the spectrum, across all aspects and segments of society, from the top to the bottom. The fracturing, the cracking, the breaking up is happening from the top to the bottom, or I might say from the foot to the head. Isaiah chapter 1 won't go there. Isaiah chapter 1, you can go back and read the whole chapter later. You're sick from head to toe. The foot can't say the head's sick, and the head can't just say the foot is sick because the whole body is sick. And that's what we see. What about Matthew 12, verse 25? Chapter 12 of Matthew, verse 25, where Jesus Christ said, "Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself will not stand." So a house divided cannot, will not stand. That song again, lines from that song. Stop now. What's that sound? Everybody, look what's going down. Do you hear it? Do you see it? Do you feel it? Does it feel like your world is shaking more than ever? That world meaning that subworld that you live in, because all of us in this room and those listening in, we all live in what I call these little subworlds within the greater world. And when the whole world around us starts to shake, our little worlds in that world begins to shake as well. We don't avoid the shaking that's going on. Christ says, I set you among wolves, as sheep among wolves. John 17, the long prayer he gave, I don't seek to, Father, for you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. We're of the world. We're in the world, but not of the world. We're fighting. We're devouring one another anymore. The cohesiveness, the unity, if there ever was any much, and there was at one time a bit more unity, but now it seems that how many in our world, meaning our nation, our land, how many are torching, putting a torch to our own home? There was a time that Jesus Christ prophesied of this time to come. Jot it down again, because if I were to go to all these verses, I'd never finish. Luke 17, verse 26 through 37. You can jot these down, go back later and do your Bible study. Luke chapter 17, verse 26 through 37, where Jesus Christ, in very vivid, bold colors, paints the world that you and I now live in. A parallel world to the time of Noah's world, where he talks about a world that would come that would mirror the time and parallel the time of Noah's time, as he gives that prophecy in the last days, and such shall it be again like the time of Noah's world. And what did that world of Noah's time look like? Just jot down one verse. Genesis 6, verse 11. Genesis chapter 6, verse 11. The earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. What's that sound going down? Everybody look. What do you see? What do you hear? Do you see the sound of violence and hear the sound of violence one upon the other? Do you see in the streets? You see in the halls of Congress? Everywhere you look, you see what? You see animosity, hatred, resentment. There is a spirit of anger that now fills this whole world, and that spirit of anger and that spirit of murder is growing exponentially by the day, the week, the month, the year, and again, a reason for it. A reason for it. The noise of battle, of humanity, warring against humanity. We will turn to 2 Timothy, the prophecy of the Apostle Paul for the end days. 2 Timothy. I think it's been a long time since in a message I've actually gone to this prophecy by Paul and in a sermon message. So go there with me. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Paul gives this prophecy of our time, the end time, the last days. 2 Timothy chapter 3 verse 1. But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away. You know what? I'm going to stop right there, because that gives you enough from that prophecy. You can later go back and read those other verses that follow it. A prophecy that Paul gave. See, Paul was looking forward under inspiration. Paul was looking forward 2,000 years or so ago, looking forward by prophetic discernment from the Holy Spirit to see down to our times today. And make no doubt about it, we are living in the last days. Days as in terms of the times imminent before the second return of Jesus Christ. What about, you can jot this down. Same 2 Timothy, the same letter, chapter 4, verse 1 through 5. 2 Timothy chapter 4, that follows that chapter I just read from, verses 1 through 5. Won't go back and read all those verses. You can go back there later. But I give you a summation, what Paul is saying in those verses. He is saying that every sound teaching and principle, foundational principles to live by, will be under attack, and no one will be listening to sound doctrine anymore. But with itching ears, as he points out in those verses, with itching ears they will seek to embrace and accept those things which are not correct for proper teaching and edification. In other words, false teachings, false doctrines. Itching ears to hear something new. I hope all of you here today and listening in, I hope that you don't sometimes come to church thinking, well, I hear all about this old stuff all the time. I hope I can come to church today and they'll tell me something new. Well, you know what? I will try to give you something new if he gives it to me. Elsewise, you're going to get the same old, because this never gets old. None of it. It stays new and refreshed in our minds and should. Anyway, they would not endure sound doctrine. I started a kind of a Exodus program, you might say, over 3 months ago, trying to get my own physical body in better shape. And in 2 weeks from today, I may talk a little bit about that, like I said, thinking about that word immunity. But when I started it, I had to put my potato chips aside, my ice cream, all those things that I really did like, you know. Rhonda said to me, she said, Gary, if it tastes good, spit it out. Those of you who understand a lot about the human body, and really and truly, I'm serious, if you understand much about the human body, and I hope I do, you know, you just cannot imbibe of those things that's going to wreck your physical immunity and even help to tear your health. So I begin to have to change some things, okay? And so, taking her statement, I wrote as a kind of a parallel reverse, you might say, if it has goodness attached to it anymore, we're told, don't imbibe of that. In terms of the right things, the right principles, see, if it has to do with goodness or the right things, no, leave that alone. Leave that alone. Put it aside. Don't taste that. From that song, there's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. I think it's time to stop and look around. What's that sound going down? Are we hearing it? Are we seeing it? Are we beginning to relate our personal lives, where we go from here? Where are you going from here? Where are you going from here? I wrote the title of that column Tuesday night, Where is God Now? If you read the column, you know where I'm coming from. Well, most of all, you should be answering that in your mind like I closed the column. He is with you if you are doing what? Obeying and being submissive and servant and being that child of God and seeking to please him, then that's where he is. He is with us and he will be with us. He will walk with us and he will tell his son, Jesus Christ, our high priest and elder brother, walk with them, my son, because that's where Christ is. Christ is walking with us right now. And that's where Christ is. If you don't know what Christ is mostly doing right now, he is walking with you and I. He is the captain of our salvation. He is with us daily and he will walk with us and be with us. And that's not even counting the extra angelic protection that we do have. That's another sermon of itself. As a watchman, what do I see? I come to that part of the why. I've laid a foundation. I've put enough information out there to give you a good idea and remind us all again of what's going on down here, what's happening down here. And now I ask the why. I've come to a pivot point in my life. Seriously, sincerely, I've come to a pivot point of understanding in my life. And that's the way I want to say it. I have done somewhat of a reversal. Now, don't say I'm introducing a heresy here and run out these doors screaming. For me personally, I've done a pivot point in my whole thinking about this subject that I'm about to give. And I see something more clear than I've ever seen it. And I really began to see it about 3 weeks ago more clearly than ever. And that's why I put this sermon together. Is it really our human nature, our carnality? Is it really that's the biggest problem? Is human nature, carnality, the real issue and the biggest problem of why this world is in a mess? Is it? Let that seep there in your consciousness a moment. I mean, are we most to blame? Are we as humans, our corrupt nature, Romans 8:7, human nature, carnality is hostile to God, cannot be in its form of self-will. It's only when we turn our will over to God and yield our life to God and let God in Jesus Christ dwell with us, tabernacle with us, only then do we begin to change our life. But I ask, is the problems on this earth right now, are they mostly our fault as humans and all mostly because of our human nature? Or is there something greater that's causing the problem? Well, I submit to you, and I've come to see this personally very clear. He's called the devil. And the devil is the one most of all responsible for what's going on. He is public enemy number one, and he is personal enemy number one. The self comes in second to that. And you know why? Because the devil takes our human nature. He works our human nature against us. He knows how to do it. I hope you get that and understand it. The devil knows exactly with each one of us, every one of us. He knows exactly our nature. He knows exactly how to motivate us to transgress, to sin. He knows your weaknesses. He knows what he cannot test you on. He knows what he can test you on. And he uses our human nature against us. And he uses human nature to come between us and God. And guess what? He also understands that from the beginning, he had to create an adversarial world that would be contrary to God's world. So let me begin to just kind of walk you through some things, write these things down, scriptures, what have you. He is the great adversary. He is the great tempter. He is the father of all liars. Just jot this down. Isaiah 14, verse 12 through 17. Isaiah chapter 14, verse 12 through 17. Jot it down, go back, look at it later if you haven't. As Lucifer, God had a perfect universe. Everything was perfect, created in his perfection. We do not know how long Lucifer was the anointed cherub at the throne of God. Probably the most beautiful created being that God had created. And he was there at the throne of God as Lucifer, that anointed cherub. We have no idea how long he had been there as that functional being. We have no idea how long from the time he was created until he led that first great rebellion and got a third of the angels to rebel. We don't know how long. And we really don't need to know. All we need to know is he fomented rebellion. As Lucifer, what did he begin to do? He began to sow tares in the wheat. He began to sow the tares in the wheat. And he began to pollute and corrupt and create at the very throne of God. At God's very throne, brethren, he created an adversarial world right there in the third heaven at the throne of God. All right? So the war took place. He was cast out eventually. So we had this thing called the Garden of Eden. God created mankind, Adam and Eve. Created a perfect world, Genesis account. And he stood back after 6 days of creation and looked upon what he had created. And that creator again was the one who later became Jesus Christ, the I Am, who did the creating there in Genesis. Colossians 1 tells us that very clearly. And so he stood back and he looked and says, all is beautiful, perfect, and it was perfect. And our parents, Adam and Eve, were there until what? Until here he come again. Here he came again to corrupt, not only to corrupt what God had created in his perfection, but to create an adversarial relationship between man and God. And there has been an adversarial relationship between God and man ever since. And then also was created adversarial relationship between the man and woman, husband and wife. And we've had that ever since. You see, he sowed the tares and the wheat again. He sowed the tares in that beautiful, perfect Garden of Eden. And he created hatred, resentment, shame, because sin brings shame and degradation. He sowed seeds of enmity between man and God. What about Job? Job minded his own business, a righteous man before God. Don't need to go back there. You should know the story well. Job was a righteous man before God, and Satan was angry. Why was he most angry at Job? He was most angry at Job. See, he took out on Job what most of all he hated in his very creator. See, he saw in Job, most of all, the righteousness of God. And what he was most seeking to destroy and attack was God in Job. And he hated that righteousness of God that was in Job. And that's what he wanted to stamp out and destroy. Job was just a human being. Had it been any other human being, that same righteousness, it would have been the same thing. I hope we're beginning to picture this devious mind and this arch enemy that we have called Satan the devil. He came to destroy God's righteousness. And that's what he's trying to do with you and I, the church. He is trying to destroy, most of all, God's righteousness in you and I. He is seeking, most of all, to remove that from you and I. And he will do it if we're not on our spiritual toes. If we're not up on our spiritual toes, he will remove it. I say he will take it from you. So he came and he tested Job. And you know the rest of the story without taking the time to go through it. What about jot down 1 Chronicles chapter 21 verse 1? 1 Chronicles chapter 21 verse 1. You have a scripture on the radar. You have this little bleep on the radar, just this one little bleep. And if you're not paying a lot of attention, you miss it. But it set the whole stage for why David numbered Israel. Why did David commit the most heinous sin of all? It wasn't the lying, the murder of Uriah, the Bathsheba, adultery. Those were big sins, but that was not the greatest sin that David committed. The greatest sin was numbering Israel that ultimately cost 70,000 lives. Why did he do it? It was his pride. It was David's pride. Pride in his might, his king, his army, which is what, brethren? That is a matter of faith. See, David did not have the proper faith in place. We cannot please God again without faith. And so it says here in that verse 1, Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel. Satan moved David to number Israel. Do we need any more explanation? Was it David's carnality and human nature most of all to blame? Not when you read that. Satan used the motivating human pride. You see, he used his human nature, David's human nature, of pride to do that. David later came to see and understand that, and how he must have loathed himself that 70,000 innocent lives died because of what he did, all because of his pride. What about Luke 4? Jot it down. Luke chapter 4, verse 1 through 13. Luke 4, chapter 4 of Luke, verse 1 through 13. Story of Jesus Christ fasting for 40 days and 40 nights there. And the whole time, the devil there. How would you like to be preparing for your earthly ministry? You are God in the flesh. Emmanuel come down to dwell with us. And how would you like to have been in Jesus Christ's shoes for 40 days and you're having to deal with the devil tempting you every way you turn? And brethren, make no doubt about it. Satan was pulling out every stop, so to speak, to stop the mission before it ever got off the ground. Because Satan understood, if I can stop this now, if I can get Christ, the Son of God, to in one point sin or transgress, the plan's over. Remember James says, the book of James, letter of James, Christ's brother, if you sin in one point, you have sinned in all. He understood, all I have to do is, we use that term, trip him up one time and it's over. Christ knew that. 40 days and Christ endured and prevailed over the devil, as you know. So he came there trying to stop a mission before it ever, so to speak, got off the ground. What about Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2? Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2. All my life, how many times this verse has been given in sermons, I've read, you know, how many times, let it be emblazoned on your remembrance forevermore, when Paul says that he is the prince of the power of the air who now works in the sons of disobedience. I'm going to say that again. The prince of the power of the air who now works in the sons of disobedience. And I'm going to make this bold declarative statement, and I'm going to paint in bold colors and lifting the voice like a trumpet to say it. Satan is now using the social media platforms in a way to do the kind of damage that could not have been done 40 years ago. He has the perfect avenues now to work his wiles and trickery, is using social media platforms. I see it clearly. As a watchman on the wall, I see it clearly. And I've seen it for a long time. And if you're on Facebook or any of the other mediums, you need to be very aware of what you post and how it can affect other people, because when you post something, it goes viral. You know that. Satan is having a heyday. It's become his workshop. How do you think that when the beast power comes together one day, how do you think it's going to come about? I just sent a column the other night. What they done to that church group up in Portland last weekend, I put it in the column. They coordinated it through what? These social media platforms. They couldn't have done this 40, 50 years ago. The prince of the power of the air. That means broadcasting. He is broadcasting now. He has the perfect avenues almost to broadcast through. And he will use us. He will use us even in the church. And he will work on your human nature and our human nature. And he will get you sometimes to post something that you shouldn't post. You can turn here, Matthew 13. Matthew chapter 13. Turn there. We'll read a few verses here. Matthew chapter 13. Brethren, this sermon came about, as you're turning there, this sermon came about because I feel so impelled and did to give it. I gave it last week in Birmingham and Tupelo, Fulton. I see it now. I see so clearly what's going on. And this is a grand design. He knows his time is short. He knows it. And those with him know it. The demons, the dark side. Why are we seeing such hatred and resentment and a spirit of hatred and murder in the world around us? And it is growing, the violence. That's what happened in Noah's time and God destroyed it. Why are we seeing it? Because he's more and more invading the thoughts and hearts and minds of everyone around us. And he's dividing people against people. That's how he does. That's his wiles. You read the wiles and trickery of the devil. It all has to do with, he knows exactly how to pit you against someone else. And he's going to pit you and I in the church. He is going to, he's been doing, and he will continue to do it. And he will pit you and I in the church in any way he can. And he will drive a wedge between you and I in the church in any way he can. Because he understands perfectly, you might say, how to drive wedges. Matthew 13, I just want to drop here to verse 37. Jesus Christ here speaking. He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. Verse 38, the field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom. But the tares are the sons of the wicked one. And in verse 39, the enemy who sowed them is the devil. And the harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Jesus Christ leaves no doubt who is the one who is sowing the tares. Tares of division and animosity, sowing an adversarial world. He has got brethren. That is the devil. The devil must. His final mission on this earth, the finishing work of this age for Satan the devil. And I'm going to say it because this is what I truly believe. The devil, his final mission, most of all, is to destroy the church. That's you and I. And that is to bring as much persecution down on top of your head as he can, and it will come. It's coming already. Some of you, as I panoramically, so to speak, deal with all of you, phone calls, emails, visits, you name it, you're telling me stories. You're telling me your stories. You're telling me things you're having to endure right now. Persecutions that are coming at you right now. And you know, I see this. And I know why. Because he's out to destroy you and I. And that's his final mission, is to do that. Now, if he can take America down, he can stop the gospel. And the time will come. I don't know when. The time is coming where the gospel will be shut down in America. I don't know when. Could be sooner, could be later, but it's coming. We will not always be able to meet like we're meeting today. We will not. Prophecy tells me so. And that's not even talking about discernment. I hope godly discernment, because I do see my role. I see my role. I say it boldly. I know I'm a watchman on the wall, and I will seek to continue to be that. I'm to see that danger out away as it nears, comes near. Stop, children, the song says. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Do we see it? Are we able to see it clearly? There's a place in the Bible, before you turn there with me, there's a place in the Bible that brings it down very much to our time right now and the ensuing time just ahead of us, and speaks probably as prophetically to where we are now and where we are and what's going on around us down here as any place in the Bible. It's in the greatest prophecy book in the Bible, Revelation. Go to Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12. We could have gone here to Revelation 12 as we did when I was a child growing up in the church. We did many times, and we could preach about this decades ago, and there was a lot of things we could say back in that day and time. But now, as we've come to this place where we are today, these things now are actually so much right in front of us all. And we're being able now to see these things very clearly and to make greater sense. You hear that old term, cliche, to make rhyme and reason as to why. And again, my point today is to not just to put on the table, as I've tried to do, a lot of the things, and I could have put a whole lot more if time gave me more opportunity to do so about what we see, because most of us can see a lot of these things going on, but to understand more deeply, is it really us? Is it really us as human beings? Are we really our greatest enemy? No, the devil is. Brethren, you cannot believe how much better it's going to be in 1,000 years when he and his are not around for 1,000 years. You'll still have human nature. Why does it get so much better? Why is the plan to put them away for 1,000 years? Because the Father and Jesus Christ know and understand. We can work with human nature. But with the devil and his around, it's going to be almost impossible. We're coming up to the Day of Atonement. I will be with you here on the Day of Atonement with hopefully Mr. Martin here. And I don't know what Mr. Martin will give. I might put a bug in his ear. But that's one of the big pictures of the Day of Atonement, is he will be bound for 1,000 years to be with us no more. To be sent to the pit with those others to the pit. Can you imagine their gnashing of teeth when they have to be all together for 1,000 years before they're let out again for a short season? Why is persecution heating up? And it is and will. Because he's angry. Here in Revelation 12, drop down to verse 7. Break right into the context. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found around for them in heaven any longer. We know that some great cosmic battle took place originally when Lucifer rebelled and those third of the angels. There was this great battle took place. But we cannot know. We cannot know how many times that Satan the devil at one time was allowed to come to the throne of God. We knew he came to the throne of God with Job. And we know that he had discussions with God at that time. But we just know that at one time that rebellion cost this great war and they were cast out. And then we find in verse 9, so the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who what? Deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth and his angels were cast out with him. Got a question. You answer it quickly. When Christ did his ministry for 3.5 years, was Satan off on some other planet or universe? Where were the demons? They were all around Christ and the apostles to be and the disciples and the brethren. They were all around Christ at 3.5 years. They've been around down here ever since that time, ever since the apostolic age. Why do you think the persecution was so great? The early New Testament church, many were martyred, thrown into Rome's arena. What was really behind that? It was the devil and his, as the devil was trying then to stamp out the church. He's been trying to stamp the church out ever since. He tried to stamp out the mission in the wilderness for 40 days and nights before it ever got off the ground, but he did succeed. And he did succeed in stamping the church out before, and he will never succeed in stamping the church out. Matthew 16 tells us the gates of hell will not prevail against it, Christ says. The church will endure. The only question for you and I always behooves to be asked of us, we as a part of the church, will we endure with the rest of the church? Because he's after you. He's after me. He's after you. He's after us all. He's got the world deceived. Verse 10, I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren who accused them before God day and night has been cast down. Verse 11, they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. We see how we do the overcoming. We overcome through and by the blood of Jesus Christ. We see and understand that. Without Jesus Christ in our life, there's no way to overcome the devil. He came and he lived and he died and he rose again that we might have life and have life eventually one day evermore through eternal life. But in this physical life now, the call out ones as ecclesia, the church, the body of Christ, we are to be about holding tight to the coattails, you might say, of Jesus Christ. Holding on to his righteous garments. Verse 12. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath because he knows that he has a short time. Brethren, that's what's going on right now. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth. That's what's going on. That's what's happening down here. What's that sound going down? Do you hear it? Do you hear the fracturing? Do you hear the breaking up? I said the other day to someone, I said, you know, we're just getting the stuffings kicked out of us. Humanity. Brethren, he hates all humanity. He hates the saints most of all because you have promised to you the inheritance one day of eternity to be in the very family of God, with the Father himself coming down in New Jerusalem eventually, and we dwelling with the Father in New Jerusalem forever with Christ the Lamb with us. That's our future. And where is he going to be? One day he's going to be totally gone forever. So if you were in his shoes, so to speak, and you don't even think that way, what would you be trying to do? The only victory you could have in your own twisted, perverted mind is to rob you and I of the inheritance that's been promised to us. That's his mission. He's got his bead on us. We've come to a time ahead. Verse 13. Brethren, this is a time ahead, a prophecy of yet a time ahead. When the dragon saw that he had been cast to earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. A certain amount of this has already been going on, yes, for 2,000 years. But verse 14, we see something here. But the woman was given 2 wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a times from the presence of the serpent. Let me pause. Very clear. Very clear. This is not the revelation of John. This is the revelation of Jesus Christ to John the Apostle. And so we see here a time coming when there will be a fleeing church and Satan seeks to destroy the church, a certain part, group of the church that God will take to a place of safety, and the devil seeks to stomp that out, destroy it. What happened at the Red Sea? Pharaoh's army came out to destroy. And what happened? The ocean swallowed up the army that pursued the woman. Because Stephen says plainly in his Acts chapter 7 sermon that Israel was that congregation in the wilderness. God caused Pharaoh's army, influenced by Satan the devil, to be swallowed up as it pursued the woman there in the wilderness. And it will happen again. We go on reading here. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And I just described that. That same analogy, that same type happening occurred that day at the Red Sea. By the way, doing some study reading on Moses this past week, and I can assure you, based on what I studied, Moses knew. He knew that God was about to perform a dramatic miracle. Moses knew that God was going to deliver them, whether he had to do it through that Red Sea or whether he took them in flight in the air over those mountains. He knew that God was going to deliver them. That's why he said to Israel that day, stand still and see the salvation of God. I say to us here today, and I use those same words, and you listening in, stand still in the times we're in and ahead, and just continue to watch the salvation of God work for you and work out for you. Doesn't mean you won't be persecuted at times. Doesn't mean who knows what. But you know what? I will never leave you nor forsake you is a solemn promise. And God cannot lie, as Romans 3 tells us. This last verse of Revelation 12, verse 17. And the dragon was enraged with a woman. Did you get that word? Enraged. Let me say something. Brethren, I can't even fathom. I cannot even fathom, neither can you, the level of anger that he has for us. We left the feast in Jekyll Island a few years ago. The last great day, we call it the eighth day. And Bill Cowan Jr., he's dead now. And we miss those saints like Bill that we've lost. And Bill Cowan Jr. closed the feast out that year. And in that big booming voice he had. And he closed his sermon out. And he took 2 or 3 minutes before he walked off that stage. Some of you may have been there. And he says, I want to warn you. I want to tell every one of you as you go back home how much the devil hates you. It sent chills up me because I realized that. It says here he was enraged with the woman. And he does what? It says, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Who are they? It's those that are going to go through the great tribulation of 2.5 years. And he goes to make war. And he goes to destroy. And he does. You read, that's what the fifth seal is. Religious martyrdom. Many, if not most, that are called and come out of that great tribulation will have been martyred. That's why I wrote the other night. How long, when I wrote to you the other night from Revelation, how long, O Lord, will it be till you avenge our blood on these persecutors, these people? And God says, rest a little longer to your fellow saints. So we see a time ahead when there's a group that he can't get to for 3.5 years. God preserves and protects. But then the great tribulation, as the gospel will go out from two witnesses from Jerusalem for 3.5 years. And I think that's pretty much solved as to why many will be called. Because many will be called and converted through the work of the two witnesses for 3.5 years. And the beast's power will destroy and kill the vast majority of them. That's why you have Daniel 7. Without going back to Daniel 7, they will seek to wear out the saints. What I have tried to give today hopefully has got your head up even more to the essence of what we're up against. We're up against, as Ephesians 6:12 says, Ephesians 6:12, where Paul says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Let us go forth knowing more than ever and understanding that we do not wrestle, brethren, against flesh and blood. We are wrestling against he and his in these deep, high, dark places. If you want to know why so many and most of our leaders in Washington are doing what they're doing, he's got them right where he wants them. They are doing his bidding. That's why you have these maniacal decisions being handed down. This is why the executive branch doesn't work anymore. The legislative branch of our government doesn't work anymore. The judicial branch doesn't work anymore. It's all been broken. It's all broken. And it cannot be put back together. And it will take Jesus Christ coming back. And for 1,000 years, with us the saints rolling our sleeves up and saying, let us be about the work of restoration that you find in Acts chapter 3, verse 19 through 21. Acts 3, verse 19 through 21, where Peter says, Christ must wait in heaven to the times of restoration of all things. And that's why the coming Feast of Tabernacles, we should all look very much forward to it, is a time when that time begins with Christ coming back. What's going on down here? What's that sound? I hope you know more today.